Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Kevin.
Two creatives who have placed creativity at the center of our lives. And this is the Time is Right podcast. So today, we're back to our interview series, and today we have Marisha V, author, musician, world traveler. And Marisha, welcome to The Time is Right.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
Glad you could be here.
So we're going to dive right in. Now, so the first thing we usually ask is, what are your creative jams?
My favorites are music and writing. I play a variety of instruments, piano and oboe. I recently picked up the harp and the guitar. I like to sing, write music. So yeah, just like a variety of instruments. And my writing, I currently published six books. And that's kind of my passion. Yeah.
I like the oboe and the harp as a pairing. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Both beautiful instruments and both difficult.
Yeah, the oboe is incredibly difficult. The oboe and the clarinet, because of the woodwinds, the reeds, not my favorite thing. Admittedly, not my favorite.
And the harp has so many strings. I'm intimidated by my six-string guitar.
The huge ones, yes, they do. I just have the little lap harp. And so it's like half of the, sorry. I don't mean I have the big one. I have the little lap one for beginners. So I do like Mary Had a Little Lamb. I'm very, very amateur.
You start somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't they like color code some of the strings so you can always know where you are on the thing?
Or
not only the big ones?
So all of my C's are color coded. There's a red and a blue one. And so very helpful because it's so similar to the piano. And so I picked it up a lot faster than I did.
The yeah. Then no frets.
See, the
on
things
harp.
You learn on this show. I mean,
I know. Do you remember, think back, way back. Do you remember the first time you embarked on a creative project deliberately? Like say, I am going to create the thing, whatever that thing might be.
Yes, actually I do. The first project that I did was a poem I did when I was, I want to say 10 or 12, some very weird, like middle adolescent age. And it was published in a book called Reflections. It was a piece that at the time it meant a lot to me, but then I got older and I reread it and I was like, I have no idea what I'm talking about. You know how kids are just very, it felt very emo and deep. And I got older, maybe like 10 years. And I remembered that the book existed and I was like, oh yeah. And I went back to reread it, and I was like, this is awful. What am I talking about? Like, I don't know. But it was my first creative project. It was the first time I felt, you know, like affirmed and encouraged. So it was a good step.
Yeah, no, that was great to have it published, too. I wonder, though, if a 12-year-old read it today, if it might speak to them still. And maybe it
That's
doesn't
true.
Speak to you now, but maybe it would.
Right. That's great. I didn't even stop to think about that. That's true.
I did read some of your poetry, by the way.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I got particularly hooked into excerpts from The Disconnect.
Oh, okay.
And there's some visceral stuff in there. I mean, it's there's no holds barred. I mean, I loved it.
Thank you. Really
enjoyed it.
I'm really glad you liked it.
One of the things that I notice about your writing is it seems to come from very deep places, if that's a fair way to put it. I'm not sure if that's really what I mean. But you don't hold back, I guess, is my point. Is that the kind of thing you just feel that's what you want to write at the time, or do you feel it's important to bring that level of depth out of yourself and into your art, out onto the page?
I think that now I'm a little bit bolder and very comfortable with being transparent and vulnerable without sharing all of myself, just aspects that I would like my readers to connect with. without feeling like I've left nothing for me. But I used to be kind of shy, and I was a little worried about how I would come off, or if people would relate, or if my content wasn't like palatable. And as you continue writing and start getting feedback, you realize like those things are like byproducts of your content, but they're not the focus. They shouldn't be the purpose of it. You write for you. Mm-hmm. And so now, yeah, I don't hold back like what I feel, what I think. It's just, it's kind of like it's on paper and I can't take it back. You know?
And so, yeah, that's interesting. So, and I think a lot of artists go through this where you start trying to please everybody or trying not to put too much of yourself out there. And then as you evolve as an artist, you become more willing to share that stuff. And I think you kind of covered it already, but can you think of a moment or can you think of a time when that you've started to feel that change, whenever you felt, yeah, I can, I'm just going to do me.
It was, to be honest, and I hope I do not sound like narcissistic, but it was when I first started reading the reviews from my very first book. I first thought there weren't going to be any reviews because I was like, well, no. I was like, well, no one's heard of me and it's just Twitter. And like, so I'm just going to say these few things about my book. And if people want to like buy it or want a PDF, you know, whatever, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, you know how it goes. The first couple of reviews, it's like your mom and like your friends. Yeah. It's kind of biased. It's like, oh, wow, great job. And I'm like, all right, you know. But like then... You know, it's weird. Like, okay, I guess you have to say that. But then some of the ones you don't recognize, but they come in, and it really resonates with people. And the things they say and how it changed them, it's unreal, to be honest. And does give me the encouragement to just be like, you being you, the people that are meant for you, like your demographic, your audience, they will find you. You don't have to kind of cookie cut or make yourself into who you think people need you to be popular or palatable.
I totally get that because I think, and I don't know, Kevin, if you've experienced this too, but it's that those early days when you're trying to put things out there and you're trying to find your audience, there seems like there's a point at which you won't find your audience because you're constantly chasing them.
Right? If you're looking for them to all be sitting in a group somewhere, you're not going to find them. They are scattered one at a time all over the world. And the challenge is to connect with each one at a time and build that audience. Yeah, I had that same experience when that first stranger review that was positive came in, and it's like, ah, yes, there's somebody I've reached.
Yeah.
So one of the questions that we often ask is, do you recall a time where you were not able to express yourself creatively, or that you were not being creative, and how did that affect you?
Wow, honestly, I don't ever remember. Yes, I do. Sorry. I was going to say, I went through a phase in high school where I was finding myself so deeply, like my aesthetic and my little social crowd and stuff like that, that what I was and who I was ceased to matter as much as things that I like to do. I was going to a visual and performing arts high school. So most of my classes were music oriented, and you know, you're a teenager. So I'm like, I'll always have this thing, you know, I know how to do this or whatever. And finding my crowd was kind of more important to me. My creativity was stifled because I wanted to hang out with the cool kids, and the cool kids kind of didn't really do all that kind of stuff, you know? So I made myself less, you know, I was like, oh, you know, I do this dorky thing. I have to play piano. Like everybody got to stay out, but I had like practice strictly at 6 and then, you know, different lessons and stuff like that. And it was so silly because I actually was in an accident as a teenager in a way that damaged my frontal lobe. And so I just kind of regret the years that I missed because the competitions were invigorating to me and they were exhilarating. And, you know, 15 pieces by memory and traveling across the country and stuff like that became just sight reading and learning things over. And it just, it sucks. You know, it makes you appreciate the things that you took for granted.
Wow, a frontal lobe injury, really?
Yeah. Me and my dad were sitting, minding our business, sunny day, just spending time with him, and someone came from behind us, and I woke up in the hospital, and things just weren't the same. Wow. You know, it sucks. That's how quickly it can happen. Sorry, I didn't mean for this to get dark. That's so quiet.
No, it's okay. It is okay. And like, actually, how do you follow that? You know,
I was like, wow, Marasha, very, very hard left.
Actually, you're the second person who's come to us who was severely physically injured. One of our previous guests also went through a bad, she had a motorcycle accident. So that kind of wanted me to ask this question. Once you were recovered, I'm assuming you've recovered at this point, was it creativity getting back into doing those kinds of things that kind of maybe helped you?
It was. It was so many things. It was an array of different things that were motivating to me. I, number one, didn't want to disappoint anyone that had put time and money and energy into me by just saying like, oh, I am very scared to try to do this thing that my brain is trying to tell me that I can't do anymore, because I had like scholarships and stuff on the line. Like a lot was going on, and it was kind of like a fight or flight syndrome kind of thing. And I remembered how much I love music and how much I love writing, and I just wanted to try everything again. And I figured, you know, like, I'm a teenager. So the concept of like, if I fail, it's okay, wasn't a thing to me. It was like, if I fail, my life is over. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you get back into music and you get back into writing and you realize that it's way more than that. It's not just succeed or fail. There's all the little caveats in between where there's no judgment of like good or bad. You're doing things that feel good to you. And they were also like kind of expanding my brain again and making me feel like myself again. Mm-hmm. And next thing I know, I was kind of, you know, working my way back to myself. So I think creativity, music, art, like traveling, photography, it's all saved me. It always saves me. Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how art can do that. It's astonishing to me. I don't know if you've ever read Musicophilia by Oliver Sacks. I mean, some of the stuff in there is just astonishing to me. You know, people with severe dementia and severe Alzheimer's who can remember every song they ever learned.
Yeah, but it's so incredible how expansive the brain is and how many things are like muscle memory. And I think it's so incredible.
I want to dive into a topic that you and I talked about on Direct Message a while back. And it's something that we talked about in our last episode as well. And that's the notion of creative fraud and imposter syndrome. Now, one thing that I can tell from your work is that you're not afraid to put stuff out, and you put out great stuff. But so, I'm not going to ask you if you ever experienced that, because if you're an artist, you probably have. Maybe you haven't. Now, that would be interesting. But if you have, how do you deal?
I absolutely. I also have, I don't know, it's like 50-50. It's almost like a dissociative nature where a part of me is rooting for me. And it's like, you got this and you know what you're doing. This is your lane. And then when it comes to other aspects of projects that I've delved into, I'm so completely far out of my body that the paranoia, the anxiety, it takes over everything. I have to slow down. So like, it's like, I have to do such a serious job of like keeping myself calm so that I can actually get the content out that I meant to convey versus the one that paranoia and anxiety produces, which is nervous, you know, censored, riddled stuff that I didn't mean to, because I'm so worried about how it's going to come off to everyone else. I don't know.
Remembering to turn off your inner filters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes reading stuff, people say, "I'm like, this can't be for me. This is a mistake."
there's always going to be somebody out there second guessing you, or even just, you know, telling you you're wrong because they like to tell people you're wrong. The problem is the burden then comes to you to filter that stuff out. and to not let it bother you. And that's really, to me, what's kind of unfair about all of that.
It causes me to check myself if I'm able to discern between what is constructive criticism, like productive feedback, versus I need to just let roll off my shoulders because someone was just bored and had like extra time on Amazon or whatever. Because some of the stuff that I was just so rude and childish. And I was like, dude, like you paid for it just to kind of like trash me. That's silly. But then other stuff was like, hey, I like your book, but it kind of like triggers my epilepsy or does this or does that. Like it was stuff that was actually helping me write. It wasn't asking me to change my content. It was asking me to change how it appeared to people who were disabled in some way and stuff like that. I didn't know the difference, like the way I was conveying my bipolar was kind of causing some people to have like visual like issues because of the font changes and the broken speech. So it was just really interesting getting some of the feedback because it was helpful to me versus the feedback that was just kind of like, oh, I never want to write anything today, you know.
Well, I try to remember that not everyone can be an artist. You know,
that's true.
Everyone can be an artist if they apply themselves and they want to do it. But not everyone can produce art really, but anyone can post nonsense on Twitter. So, you know, just saying. You know, we're the podcast about everyone can be creative, and here I am saying, not everyone can.
I think what you were trying to say is that not everyone has written a book or not everyone has composed a song.
That is true.
Anyone can, but they haven't yet.
Exactly.
Yes. So actually, I was wondering a little bit about your process, particularly around your poetry. Do you have like a trusted reader or an editor or someone that looks at the poetry?
I never did. It was always just me. And that is, again, because I'm a very like naturally paranoid and anxious person, especially when I first started writing. So the thought of like having beta readers, which to be completely honest, since I'm speaking publicly, I had no idea what a beta reader was until I came to Twitter and people were asking like for beta readers. And I was like, what are they talking about? Like I had to look it up. And then when I realized what it was, I was like, can my complete strangers read their unfinished work? I was so mortified. I was like, I will never do this. Like, you know, you kind of get like a community on there and you have like a few people that you start feeling like, okay, this person, like, I don't know, I've never seen this person a day in my life, but I still kind of like trust you. Like that is such a weird mashup of things. Actually how I found two of my closest friends. One is Essie and one is Brandy. Shout out to them. And I've had Essie read so much of my work, and she is actually a very instrumental part of like the beginning of my writing because she is the first person aside from my partner that started reading my work, and she didn't know me, you know? So I got an unbiased critical feedback. I don't know. I didn't realize how much you need stuff like that. I'm an only child, okay? So only my opinion matters to me. So trusting someone else with my stuff was such a big deal. And it wasn't always great. You know, it wasn't always like, wow, you rock. It was sometimes like, yeah, this sentence is so unnecessary. This content is blah, blah, blah. And it was great. It's amazing. And like from now on, it's just, while it's not something I depend on, it's something that I know to use as a resource, as a tool.
Right. It is a tool. And like you said, you have to figure out what feedback is good or useful. Even when it's completely earnest, it may still not really be applicable to what you're trying to do. And only you can weed through that.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, John reads just about everything I write long before anybody else sees it.
Because I read his book 6 times.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because I trust him, right?
In various forms.
In various forms, yes.
Yeah. Just a side note, was that Essie or Brandy you were talking about with the
Essie
reading?
Essie.
She's amazing.
She is absolutely amazing. Yeah.
We all follow her as well.
Yes, yeah, we all follow her.
None of us can follow her.
Exactly. She is unique.
I met Essie on Twitter in a discussion with Kevin on the humanity of cyborgs. And
oh, God, I remember that.
It sounded like something. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and then you know, I met her and then got talking to her, and she introduced me to all these other folks in writing Twitter. And it's like, I found the good people.
Yes, that's what she does. It's just her. And then she's this glorious black hole that's like, here are all my other people in my orbit. And I'm like, whoa, it's so cool. And I love when that part of the community works in that way. Because then she became mm-hmm. not only like an instrumental person for business reasons, she's now one of my closest friends. You know, so I love stuff like that because networking does become a really big part of finding your community.
I'm going to ask this one so I can make Kevin ask the next one.
Oh, okay.
Because he always sticks me with the next one. All right. What is your personally most important creation to date?
The one that I'm working on right now is the first project that I've had that includes my close friends and my family. It's a project that's going to kind of integrate different facets of my life. It's going to have strangers as well, and it's going to be incredibly transparent and awkward, and I'm looking forward to it, and I hope everybody else is too. I can't give too much information about it just because I don't like to give it too much sunlight before things like are put into motion. Yep. But it's it's a really personal project for me because it requires me to be so intimately like intertwined with everyone to not only express the things that they're saying without putting them in a, I don't want to ever like convey anyone's expression in a way that they didn't mean or something that puts them in a negative mm-hmm. light or anything like that. So I have to be careful with my words while the things that they're saying to me are very hard to be careful with. So it's going to be, okay, I don't know. I can't say too much about it, but it's going to be very interesting.
I get that you don't want to go too far into it, and I won't ask you to, but I mean, is it like documentary type thing?
Or it is very much like Humans of NY with a twist.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. That's right. You're a photographer as well, right?
Yes. Amateur. I should put that before. Yes. I'm an amateur. Yes.
We're all amateurs. It's something.
We're all amateurs until we get paid.
Aha!
Nice. That's me. Oh wait, I got paid for a gig once, so I am a professional musician.
Okay, so officially professional.
It was 1993, but I do have that.
Still professional, exactly.
Anyway, still professional. I think it was $25. But anyway, that meant more in 1993.
It did.
So we've all had creative failures, or at least things that didn't work out. But I would hope that we've all learned something from that process. What do you think was either a failure or something that didn't work the way you expected that taught you the most?
I would say that it is a tie between the feedback I get for some of my music and, like I said, the first book that I wrote, Excerpts from the Abyss. So I was discussing how I was trying to convey my sometimes broken speech patterns and the varying fonts and colors. And I thought it was like the most artistically genius fueled idea ever, and like I said, a few of his initial like reviews were like, what in God's name is this? It's so disorienting, and da-da-da. it was so funny because it was so far from what I thought the reaction was gonna be. Some people were like, this is great, it's confusing because there's a situation, and other people were like, I absolutely hated this, it was so jarring. I was like, oh my God, it was just so much bail. And then like with music, so I am partially deaf. So sometimes, no matter how much you love music, it's not gonna, you either have it or you don't with certain things. You can do vocal training, but you know, there's only but so much I can do for my hearing. So with love and care, my friends will sometimes tell me that like, hey, you should get a vocalist for this song. The songwriting and the lyrics are great. The sound, you're a little flat. And they'll say it very cute, like just a little flat. And then I'll hear it back and I'm like, oh, I thought that was, okay, you're right. So some of those things, it's not always great, you know, just got to stick to what I know and not try to veer out of my lane too far.
So I do follow you on Twitter. And one thing I've noticed is that you travel a lot.
Yes.
And I'm curious how your travel feeds into your creative efforts.
So I kind of integrate the two, because when I travel, I take a little bit of everywhere that I've been with me. I try to just kind of breathe it in, mm-hmm. so to speak, but also very literally take it with me. I learn from each country's culture, their agriculture, their economics, just how they integrate and how that differs from where I currently reside. Because some countries, mm-hmm. there's some regions that you visit and you're just like, how do you live like this? Like, I mean that in a positive way, like, you know, it's a utopia or a paradise, mm-hmm. but not in an unrealistic, idyllic way, just in a way that's like, if we had a sense of community for country, I think that it would be possible. And so sometimes I get the desire to kind of put projects together based on the people that I've met. Sometimes it's the things that I've seen, or maybe like a photograph mm-hmm. that caught something I didn't see the first time in the background. Just little things always come as inspiration every time that I, you know, hop on a plane or in a car or on a train, everywhere, you know. I think the world is so vast, and that's really beautiful to me. So, you know, and I'm not to be like cheesy, but it's just constantly inspiring.
You post a lot of photos when you travel, a few anyway. Yeah. And there's always so much joy in those photos. I mean, it's wonderful.
Thank you.
Well, I have a long-winded question, and I hope you have a long-winded answer.
Okay.
But it's related. So I remember as a child, all the way into my early to mid-teens, I had a very active imagination. I mean, it was play, but I wasn't writing anything yet. I wasn't creating anything. I was just living creatively. I remember we'd take a week-long vacation, and we'd had to drive 5 hours in the family car, and then it was 5 hours back or whatever. In my mind, I was in an Apollo spacecraft going into outer space for a week, right? That was what was happening in my head. So when I look at your, you know, the travel pictures that you post and the other things, and John touched on it, you know, there's just kind of an unbridled joy there that comes across. And I'm wondering, do you try to cultivate that tight connection between your creativity and your life, or does it just kind of happen?
I think that initially I was trying to cultivate a correlation between the two. And then as I started finding myself and started finding different aspects of the world that I found beautiful, it started like just organically integrating, if that makes sense. I think when you expand your perception, it expands your perspective. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, obviously, but sorry, that was like a dull moment. But like, it is very much like, as soon as I realized I had the option to look at the world differently, beyond politics, beyond senses of different concepts of community, beyond economics, beyond just the right here in your face stuff. When I realized there's so many different like lives you can live in one lifetime, it really opens you up. And so naturally my creativity followed, and art, you know, the way I draw changed, the way I photograph changed, the way I played music changed, the way I wanted to learn, you know, it kind of changes you. Everything, you grow and you expand and it never stops. That's the other thing. I thought that I'd get a certain age and become jaded or fearful, you know, or I don't know, but you just keep expanding. Every time I do something different, I find some new part of myself that I didn't know was there. It's exciting.
It is exciting, yeah. And you know, I recently relocated, which we had been living in the same place for 15 years, and decided we're done here, and you know, I moved from Massachusetts to Rhode Island, which does not sound like much of a move, but it is, you know, it is so different here. And, you know, even it's been about 7-8 months since we got here. And in that short period of time, I felt all of my thoughts of what kind of music I want to make have changed. The sort of things that kind of get me going have changed. I'm out there on the on the beach field recording waves and birds and doing all this stuff that I never thought of doing. And it's, you know, and I owe that all to getting away from a place that was very, had started to become very negative for me and my wife, and, you know, come to another place and just be someplace else.
One of the things that, so I recently went back to New England and I visited John. That visit, plus, you know, the other stuff I was doing, it was all places I was familiar with to some degree, less so with where John actually lives now. But even that kind of, I guess, probably awoke or reawoke some things in me and my perspectives on things. And I'm sure it'll come out in poetry or whatever that I write over the next few weeks, just because it's there and it's fresh in my mind. And I suspect one of the things that I decided I need to do is travel within my own space. I can't get away from where I am physically for a while, and I don't want it to stagnate. So I bought some plants this week. They should be here tomorrow. And I've started thinking about, you know, changing things around, both in the way the house looks on the inside and my space, my garden space in the back, and all of that, because, yeah, I want that fresh perspective. I want that. I want to be able to walk outside every day and see something different in my backyard, because I think we all need that, right? We need that feedback from the world.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I'm so interested in you saying that physically you can't really change your environment for a little bit, because I'm wondering, have you ever tried virtual reality? I don't know if you're a gamer or not.
I have tried it, not recently, so I probably am behind on the technology, but when I worked in tech, I did.
Yeah, oh, really? Oh, okay. The Oculus headset has been much of a godsend for me. When I can't travel physically, or back when it was crazy, I mean, it's still crazy, but back when it was getting really crazy, me and my partner actually use our Oculus headset to have like long distance dates, and use like the National Geo apps and like the different traveler apps to, like, you know, they use the actual Google satellites and stuff like that. So it feels like you're really just wandering around and seeing different like landmarks and stuff like that or whatever without actually having to leave the safety of my home.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, that's that is an interesting alternative. I it's funny, when I'm researching, I use Google Earth a lot.
Yeah.
Because I need to see on the ground level what a street looks like somewhere, you know, and to be able to describe it better. So yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. Explore the world virtually.
Yeah.
What haven't we covered yet?
I was gonna say, where are we? I'm lost in our questions.
That's okay.
I was still interested in that cyborg conversation.
Well, it was all what was it about? It was about at what point, if you are a cyborg, at what point in the replacement schedule do you yourself no longer consider yourself human, if ever, versus when the rest of the world looks at you and says, oh, you're not a human anymore?
Like non-sentient. Oh my God, that was probably such an amazing. I have to literally come back and find that episode because I love conversations like that. Honestly, that's so like that and philosophy. I will just ramble on for hours. I'm very interested in hearing how that.
Yeah, it was very short though. I mean, yes, I think it encompassed like four Twitter posts.
Yeah,
four tweets. Oh no, I would have had a thread rolling, but you guys would have been like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry about this."
But it is a fascinating question, and that's actually when it comes to sci-fi and things like
it that. Absolutely, yeah.
That,
with AI,
What does it mean to be human? You know, or when are you not human? When are you human? And does that require a body necessarily? You know, stuff
that's
around
one
that,
of those,
you know,
things where I'm always thinking, God, we can't figure out how to treat ourselves with respect, how are we going to start treating ourselves when we are become technology enhanced, when AI is sentient, might already be, according to some people. So it's like, how, you know, we can't define what life is, when it starts, when it ends, and yet we're going forward with technology to complicate everything even more.
You know, exactly. We don't even know what life is. We could be like in a matrix right now, like a simulation, or like brains in a jar somewhere, you know, like we have no idea what we're doing. And we have broken it down into little subsets and subsets of subsets of like religion and like prejudices. It's so weird, the things that we take seriously. And we're like, dude, you're on a whole planet. You have all these options. This is what you care about. Like, it's just, oh my God, you're so complex and yet so idiotic, you know?
Well, you know, I think it goes back to the travel thing. Honestly, there are people that I know who rarely leave their own town. They don't go anywhere. And some people we grew up with, Kevin. I won't name names. but you know, and their attitude is just as small as their world. And if you live in a foreign country in particular, or just move around a bit, for any length of time, you start to gain an appreciation for the fact that you're not the only thing that exists, right? That your narcissism starts to fall away when you realize that there are people out there who are living completely fulfilling lives, but they live them very differently than you do. And so many people, even within our own country, can't figure that part out, that there are people in this country
who are shocked by the way other people live next door.
Yeah. And their experiences are so different.
Well, I remember another digression, but I remember a trip that my mother and I took soon after my father died. We went to Nova Scotia and we drove all the way around the edge. And I remember the first day we were there, we drove from one tiny town to another and we stopped to get gas. And they knew we were, you know, not from around there. And they were asking, so where are you headed? And we told them what our plan was. And the old guy we were talking to immediately said something about the people in the town that was literally 20 miles away. And he was talking about how he'd always wanted to visit it. I'm like, you could walk there in an afternoon.
Literally, what stopped? I mean, not to be ableist, but what was stopping them? They just hadn't visited?
They just hadn't. There was just no need. There was no call. There was nothing there. There was no reason to go there other than to just do it.
Was this,
and that wasn't something they were about to do.
Was this like 1420? I mean, what?
No, this was 1991, something like that.
That is very strange.
Yeah.
And sorry for the overlap in voices earlier, John. I was just agreeing with you saying that, like, everybody, you know, everybody has a different ideology on how to live within the country and within the world. And the difference is everybody's, like you mentioned, the narcissism. It's the need to be like right or wrong. Instead of letting everyone have their own way of living, everyone needs to feel like, you know, this is how I learned. And so this is how you should be doing this particular thing, or this is how you should worship this particular God. It's like, literally, if no one else is harming you, how can we not just live parallel to each other, you know, and just let it happen? It's, I don't know. It's very interesting.
Totally on board. All right. Let's see. You did that one. We went off on huge tangents, which I am going to edit something together there. That was a good conversation.
I hope so.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yes.
I'm going to have to bring Essie in after all. We were talking about cyborgs.
Oh, my God.
Yes, the interview with Mariah Shavi, where we credit Essie with all of our... Anyway.
That's fine. That's fine. She knows I love her. I love this.
Okay. So, and I already forgot what I was going to ask you. Okay. All right. What creators of any discipline inspire you?
Oh, wow. There's Lorraine Hansberry and Yayoi Kusama, Salvador Dali, Camille Claudel. There's like a lot of people. I've noticed that a lot of artists I take interest in have schizophrenia, and it wasn't something I knew they had. It was just, mm-hmm. I saw their art or read some of their work, and then I wanted to know more about the artist or the author, and suddenly everybody had like similar mental illnesses. And so what I noticed, the correlation is the abstract and yet concrete nature of their work. And I know those are directly contrasting like adjectives. However, they all have these distinct ways of identifying one way to this particular group and then yet a completely contrasting perspective to this particular group. And that's essentially all art ever is. But for some reason, when you have that neurodivergency, it just stands out like so much more. And so they're very fascinating to me. Their art is thrilling to me. And I always wonder, like, if I had lived during their time period, if I would have ever met them or been able to collab with them. I mean, of course, we all fantasize about that kind of thing. But like, I think it would have been fascinating to meet like Salvador Dali and have a conversation with him, or, mm-hmm. you know, Lorraine Hansberry, like what caused you to write this, or how. It's just, I think people are just so incredibly fascinating. Mm. One of my favorites is also Melissa Everett. She is an underground artist, and she's so thrilling because I talk to her about her work so often. She is obscure. Her art is obscure. She's like an anomaly, an enigma. And she writes like every 15th full moon. You know, I can't get her to like squeeze out a little bit more work. I just have to like let her do it when she's ready. And it is so excruciating because I love it, you know. Mm-hmm. But those are the kind of, I guess, a little masochistic. Those are the kind of artists that I love.
I have a few of those people too.
Didn't you do a book with her? Am I getting that
yes,
wrong?
Yes, I did. We did. Yeah, I did a Greek-Roman tragedy mashup where it's like about Ra and Eros, who would have never, ever like collided mm-hmm. in actual mythology, but we put them together and made them both lovers and arch enemies. And I really enjoyed it.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I think that one's going on my TBR.
Yeah, definitely.
Yay! I'd definitely like to give it to you for free. Please don't buy anything. I appreciate being on the podcast, and I love to hear you guys.
Please.
We try to support.
We so support. We got to support. He makes me buy his books. Kidding.
His face is so funny.
After you've read them six times, yes, it's your punishment to buy the finished copy.
Oh man. Okay.
But you have signed copies.
I do have signed copies, yes.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
Well, you came here and signed them.
Well, yeah, so I mean, you had a personal appearance.
That's though, right. That's right. I had my own personal appearance with the author. Oh my God. Okay.
Oh my God.
If you haven't noticed, we've known each other since high school. So, and that was very long ago.
Oh, that's
ago.
So true. I was gonna ask like after the show. I was wondering how long you guys have like been friends. That's so cool. I love long standing friendship.
We can't even do that math anymore. I don't even know.
No.
I don't even know.
Decades
have passed. Okay.
Anyway. I love it.
So what creative projects, I say it plural because you are involved in multiple things, are you currently working on that you'd like to talk about?
So most people know that I said goodbye to poetry forever. My last book was Caliginosity. The title and the content are both random and obscure because it was a book that I didn't even, I think I maybe promoted it like once on purpose to be this very like, if you find it, you find it. If you don't, it's fine if you never knew about it. It's just my own personal goodbye to poetry because I don't plan on ever doing it again. Hmm. It's It was like a torrid breakup, a torrid public breakup with poetry. I'm moving on to novels and short stories and things that, you know, challenge me a little bit more. I think I'm done with my poetry phase. So right now I'm working on a horror story called July 13th. It is a novel about a young girl who dates a person every year. She dates a person that's new, every year. And on her birthday, she kills them. And she meets this one person. Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh after that. She meets this one person.
I can see the horror movie already. Yes. Happy birthday to me.
She meets this one person, and it is basically their mission to not only prove that she is doing this insane thing, but to protect themselves and anybody that she might have had on her little birthday list in the future. So that's one of my projects. I'm loving working on that. But novel writing is new to me. So I'm doing a lot of reading to prepare for my writing to make sure that I'm not still poetry writing and novel writing, if that makes any sense. I want to get my structure, my format, my use of words. I don't want every little phrase to be like, and then she said, and he was like, you know, I don't want to get into all that. So I'm really taking my time, you know, like the kind of, I don't want all that kind of like repetitive nonsense. So I'm taking my time with that. And that's been a lot of fun so far. I'm also working on an adventure, like a choose your own adventure. That's like a whole bunch of short stories. That is, quite honestly, the most difficult thing I've ever worked on, because novel writing in short stories is kind of fine for me. It is the concept of choose your own adventures, because you have to write it in such a way that it doesn't quite end this way, but like it'll end this way if you go back here. And then like if you choose this, though, it's so, I don't know what made me start this, but it's going to be like my longest project already. Like, I already know that. And my last one is a psychological supernatural like tragedy drama. It is a non-fiction genre drama that has a little bit of psychology in it about mental illness, supernatural like sci-fi kind of aspects, and then also a psychological thriller. So without fusing too much into one, I am making this very random non-genre thing that I have not read myself, so I wanted to make one, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That makes a lot of sense.
We always want to write the books that we haven't read.
Yes. Yeah. So those are my main projects. I'm still just continuing travel photography. Still have a couple of things to work on from my most recent trip to Sweden. I leave a lot of things in the Google Drive. It's so much gets procrastinated on, to be honest, but like I'm that little meme that's like, I'm trying my best, you know. So, yeah, those are the things I'm working on so far. I would like to start some music projects. A friend of mine who is a producer just got a wicked studio. And so I would love to go and work on that. And just because he's my friend, I would feel more comfortable, you know, working on my stuff without someone hovering over me or like, you know. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
That's very awesome. Okay.
The choose your own adventure thing is intriguing because, John and I both have, we come back from a tabletop role-playing background. And if you've ever tried to run a game and the players come in and ruin it because they have their own ideas about what to do.
They chose their own adventure.
They chose their own adventure and it wasn't one you planned for.
It's like a Dungeons and Dragons
game? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, like, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, you try to prepare for everything ever, but you still end up essentially...
winging it.
Winging it, you know. What's that called? The show, What's My Line? Improv. You're basically doing improv.
Oh, yeah. That must be so fun.
It is fun.
It is, yeah. Nice. Especially if you're one of the players who's messing with the game master.
No comment.
What? That's the troublemaker. That's so funny.
They still have the power to kill your character.
That's right.
So you can't push it too far.
I think it's time for our resources section.
I agree. We always ask our guest first to provide any resources related to creativity that they have found helpful.
As far as the resources that I found helpful, there are several that I use online. I currently don't have any prepared off the top of my head. I do have a website, though, that I would like to share where everyone can kind of see my photography. You can travel vicariously through me if you choose to, or it also has content about how to reach me for travel opportunities and volunteering, help with writing, all that kind of stuff. And it's just MarijaVWanderlust.com.
And John, do you have a resource for us this week?
I do. And we'll be putting those links on the show notes, of course. Okay. Yes. So my resource, I recently finished, I'm such a slow reader. I finally finished a book by Rebecca Solnit. She's amazing. And it's called A Field Guide to Getting Lost. And I found it's kind of a rambling set of essays. I mean, essays is what she writes. And it's the whole premise being that you have to get lost before you can be found. And when she talks about getting lost, it's not some, it can be getting lost in the woods, getting lost in the desert, getting lost at sea. But it can also be getting lost in your life, finding yourself in a place that you didn't plan on being. And that's where you find who you are. That's where you find your life. That's where you find the real you when you get rid of all of that familiar stuff and find yourself in uncharted territory. And I'm not doing this book justice right now because her writing is really quite, I hadn't read anything by her before except maybe an article here and there. And her prose is amazing, and the story she tells and her connection of ideas and juxtaposition of imagery. Just, it's just a great, great book, and I highly, highly recommend it. That's A Field Guide to Getting Lost by Rebecca Solnit.
So I just finished a book by the poet Mary Oliver, but it's not a book of poetry. The title is Why I Wake Early, and it's not a book about getting up early to get the words in and get all your writing done. It's about finding time and space to connect with your creative self and your creative life. And it's really just full of these, you know, she's very inspired by nature, so it's a lot of nature observations, but she always brings each of these essays back to her creative self and her creative experience. And for her, seeing anything from an injured duck or a frog or just anything that she sees leads her to start asking questions and asking deeper and deeper questions. And then those kind of come out in her poetry later. But for her, it was about getting up early in the morning when no one else was around and finding that space to kind of explore all of that. Now, that said, it doesn't mean you have to wake up early. You know, maybe sunset walks are your thing, or staring at the stars. The point was to find that inner space wherever it was. So not unlike getting lost. She also brought up a concept that I'm still, it really stuck with me and I'm still thinking about. And she said that the creator, once you have the idea to create something, you then have a responsibility to that creation. And you are responsible for that creation's existence. Either you see it through and make it what it should be, or you put it aside, or you remake it later, or you decide it should never see the world. But it is your responsibility as the creator, and you should take that responsibility seriously. and be intentional about whatever it is you're trying to create. And I just thought that was a really interesting concept, and I'm still thinking about that. So that's Why I Wake Early by Mary Oliver.
Nice. That's really interesting. All right. I think that wraps up our show. Marisha V, thank you so much. This was so much fun. I had a blast. Yes. I had a blast.
This was a joy. Thank you so much.
I want to have her on again sometime.
There's no limit to the number of appearances.
This is so much.
I'd love to hang out again.
Cool. We should do that. Future episode. What were you just listening to? You were listening to the Time is Right podcast. If you like the show, or even if you don't like the show, leave us a rating, leave us a review. Helps us get there in the up there in the show notes. Helps us get there in up there in the reviews. Oh my God. Okay. This is terrible. These are the stupid things I leave in.
It didn't sound that cold.
Anyway, Marisha V, thank you. People can find your stuff at MarishaVWanderlust.com. Is that right? And they can get your books. Where can we get your books?
Amazon, of course, but I know that we are trying to focus on going anti-corporate lately. So if you Google my name, Marisha V, there are a lot of thrift bookstores and like alternative bookstores that sell my stuff used, signed, cheaper. I'm all for everyone. I'm absolutely advocating for cheaper books. If you reach out to me directly, whether you know me or not, I'll also just send you a PDF. No worries.
Cool, man. Awesome. I'm John Davis. I'm a musician and composer, and you can find my stuff under the name JD Sampo, and you'll find me on Bandcamp at JD Sampo, and YouTube at JD Sampo, which is where all the cool videos are. SoundCloud. I'm also on Twitter at JD Sampo, and Instagram at JD Sampo, and blah, blah, blah. I'm at JD Sampo. social media. Ugh. Anyway, Kevin.
And I'm Kevin Fellows. You can find me at all of the aforementioned places, minus YouTube and Bandcamp, as Kevin J. Fellows. My website is kevinjfellows.com.
All right. That's a wrap. Marisha V, thank you so much.
Hopefully
talk soon.
Thank you. Good night, guys. Thank you again.
Good night. So, all right. What do we say, Kevin? Bye for now. She was a real booster for me when, you know, I started putting music out. She's like, "You gotta listen to this."
I need a couple of those links myself. Your music links. I said I need a couple. Yeah, I want to hear that.
I have a YouTube channel. Okay.
I'm going to ask John to narrate one of my books for an audio book, but
then something like that happens. Something like that happens.
For those who are based on granite.
So anyway, oh dear, I have thought about doing audiobooks, but maybe not like that.
Yeah,
I think it's a great idea. As long as we maybe cut the YouTube voice thing.
Yep. Okay. Digression over. We are.
Sorry.
That was fun. All right. So.